What lessons from 2020 can you apply to 2021? It may seem like 2020 was just a big ball of terrible, but there are some hidden nuggets that we should be incorporating into our plans for 2021. And this is exactly the topic that Jonathan and Crystal are discussing in today's bonus episode from Haunt Weekly. So if you've already listened to this episode on the Haunt Weekly feed, feel free to skip, but if not, give it a listen.
Welcome to Haunt Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment community. But anyways, since we were canceled, we don't really get to talk about the lessons we learned.
Right.
Because that's what we usually do in this episode is we talk about five things that went well and a few things that went wrong. What are we going to do different?
Right.
And we try to pull something out of it for us.
Right. And we put in some for the industry as well from what we've seen by going to visit. Haunts. We didn't do any visits either.
No, so we really have no personal insight. But what we can do is look through the various groups and forums and communities we're members of. Think back to the private conversations we've had with haunters and haunt owners, and also just read the damn news.
Yeah,
and yeah, there's a lot of interesting lessons I think the haunt industry should pull from 2020, the sooner the better in these cases, because there are some things we did in 2020 that may need to be more permanent.
Right.
And some things we did in 2020 that we shouldn't have had to do, and maybe we should be defending against. And real fast, I want to say, if you're like, hey, I talked to you guys about that, you might have, but believe me, I think every item on this list we heard from multiple people.
Yeah.
Multiple sources.
Exactly.
So... Yeah. You know, no one is being called out or singled out here. No one is the only one. Well, any of these, believe me, these were all extremely common.
Right.
Things. So, yeah, basically, we just want to figure out where the haunt industry was struggling. And to that end, we have five lessons the haunt industry needs to learn from 2020 and ways they can improve in 2021 and beyond. Okay, I'll take odds, I guess. We should really talk about this before we get on the podcast, shouldn't we? Professionalism. We got it.
You just either throw it to me and tell me to go, or you take it.
So. All right, well, I'll start this one. The need for improved security and safety. I think this is the immediate thing that leaps to mind.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of safety and security, 2020 was easily our worst year that I can recall.
Yeah, no kidding.
I mean, possibly the worst year since the Six Flags fire.
Yeah, yeah, it's been rough, folks. Like, really rough.
We had six shootings, multiple near shootings and violent incidents.
Yeah.
And nearly every haunt we spoke to, every haunt we saw in like our haunted attractions or in our haunted hangout, was reporting a marked increase in having issues with customers.
Yeah. Everybody was more angry and agitated this year.
Yeah, and it was crazy because you're having haunts say things like, yeah, we maybe have to throw out like one or two groups a season, but now we're throwing out like three or four a night.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And that's insane.
That's an insane uptick. That's like 100. That's like 12x uptick in incidents. And given the fact, like I said, when we talked about the shootings, we talked about how in the entire run of Haunt Weekly,
yeah,
going all the way back 257 episodes, so that's well north of 60 news episodes we've done over the span of four seasons. And the hotel. over the span of all those seasons, we never reported a shooting until 2020.
Right.
Zero shootings. In 2020, we reported six.
Yeah, and if you think you're getting out of a gun-related incident in our next news story, you're wrong. Because there's at least one more to do.
Yep. So, yeah, technically, I think we have seven, but this gun... Yeah. That one wasn't a shooting, I don't think.
No, it was just a problem with it.
It was gun-related, but it didn't involve an actual shooting.
Exactly.
So another violent incident near shooting. Throw it on that pile. Because that's a better pile. And yeah, okay, I get it. It was a very uniquely tense year. Okay, you had a very heated election. You had COVID-19 causing people to go absolutely bonkers. through quarantine and lack of things to do. And yeah, you've got a lot of tension out there, and people go to haunts to blow it off, and sometimes things got out of hand. I get that. But here's the thing. We need to rethink safety and security of haunted attractions. And the go-to right now of just, hey, we'll just add a metal detector, ain't going to cut it.
No. And also, you know, if you're going to do metal detectors and wanding and stuff, why, for the haunts that have shuttles, why not do it while people are getting on?
Yeah.
Onto the shuttle? Because that one incident from the last news episode where the guy pulled the gun on the kids in the shuttle, that would have been stopped there.
Yeah.
You know? So.
Yeah.
But like you said, those aren't a fail safe.
No, and we've got to rethink design almost entirely. And it's got to start inside the haunt for part of it, because one of the problems, and this is leaning less to shootings and more to just problem groups, I go through a lot of haunts, and I'm looking through it as a builder, designer, and part-time actor eyes a lot, and I'm like, that actor has no retreat space.
Yeah, exactly.
That actor is just in the goddamn room, and if I start swinging my fist, he, she has nowhere to run to. They are just my prey.
Yeah.
And they have nowhere to get to. They cannot escape. I can corner them. I can, you know, I can injure them. I can seriously hurt them. We need to make sure that actor retreats are a core part of the haunt. That way, if there is a problem group, that group, you know, the actors can get out of harm's way until security or whoever is able to get him removed.
Right, exactly.
And that is really important, and something so many haunts, including a lot of really big name haunts, do not do. They do not give actors an easy way out of a scene. And I'm not even necessarily talking like getting into an actor. I'm talking like a retreat into a prop or behind a wall or into a stall or something. You know what I mean? Just a retreat out of harm's way. You do not actually see that in a lot of these haunts. They're just in the room, exposed, and oftentimes in a corner. That has to stop. And also, we have to focus on not so much security presence, but security access.
Right.
To that end, I think every haunter should take the tour that we did of Hell's Gate.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was inspirational.
Yeah. Get the behind-the-scenes tour when you go.
It's mind-boggling.
Yeah.
I went through Hell's Gate, I thought, this is a neat haunt. This is a really cool haunt. I enjoyed this haunt.
Yeah.
And then I took the behind the scenes tour and it's, mind blowing.
Exactly. Because they thought out everything.
Yeah.
And it's so smart. I mean, it is so smartly done.
And like one of the smart things they did is they don't have a huge security staff, but their security staff is going down a hallway that runs right through the middle and has access on both sides to every single room.
Yeah.
And so two security guards can be in any room in that haunt in 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And virtually no time at all. And 10 seconds is a gross exaggeration, but in few seconds, they can be in any room, under a minute. They can be in any room in that haunt without having to cut through the customers, without having to blow by any actors or anything. They just can enter it. They can grab the problem makers and get them right the hell out without any fuss.
Right.
It's a genius system. And that same system is used to put actors into scenes. So, and get them out for bathroom breaks and so forth. It's such a mind-blowing tour. And it made me realize, we don't need more security guards.
Yeah.
We need the security guards we have to have better access to the scenes and to where the problem is. And I get it. In a lot of old haunts, especially if you're in a place like the mortuary, that's a historic building, that may not be possible. You may have to compensate with more bodies.
Yeah, but I mean, so here's the thing. Every haunt has to have an actor run. And it has to have, you know, certain number of feet between exits.
Mm-hmm.
And you actually save space if you are able to do that hallway down the middle.
Yeah.
Because then your rooms are bigger because they're on the sides. You don't have to squish them together all in the middle with an outside rabbit run.
Yeah.
You can have it down the middle. So I just I think it makes a lot of sense.
It does. So. If you're going to do a fresh build of a haunt, like you're going to build from the ground up, that design is way better than the tradition of the rabbit run around the outside.
Yeah. Yeah, because you have to be, what is it, 30 feet?
I forget what it is these days.
Yeah.
I completely forget. I think you have to have, I think it's every 40 feet to an egress corridor.
Right.
An emergency exit to an egress corridor.
Yeah.
And then the egress corridor has its own set of rules.
Yeah. And the egress corridor is what usually runs around all of the scenes.
Yeah. Yeah, what they did at Hell's Gate was beyond brilliant.
Yeah.
I mean, John LaFlamboy should be a leader in this industry because he's definitely a goddamned innovator.
Yeah. Yeah, I really wish that we could get him on to talk about that.
I want to make another run at it.
Okay.
If anybody has an in, I would love to have John LaFlamboy on this show. I would all bend over backwards to make that happen.
Yeah.
But regardless, yeah, we need better security access, and we need to make sure actors have retreat spaces. We also have to rethink queue lines to avoid dense crowds.
Yeah.
Now, there's a lot of reasons for this. Mm-hmm. One, that avoids fights and avoids cutting and those types of things.
Right.
Second, it avoids COVID and disease-related vectors, too.
Right.
But also, it just improves the customer experience.
Exactly. I cannot tell you how big of a difference it is to be able to wander around
a property,
and like do games and stuff, and then be called over a loudspeaker versus standing in a line.
Yeah, that's what Camp Blood. That's what a couple of Atlanta haunts actually. Camp Blood was the most notable.
Yeah.
But yeah, Camp Blood did it, and there was another one in Atlanta that did it. We didn't hit it on the way out.
Yeah.
Had a little outside area you milled about. You played some carny games and then you eventually got a pay. There it was a text.
Right.
At Camp Blood, this is how it was. Like when we were in Atlanta, this was multiple years ago now. But they would call, they'd give you a card, A, B, C, D, E, or something like that. And they'd say, A group to the gate. A group, something like that. And you walk up and you go in the haunting.
Yeah. And, you know, all that time we're waiting, we're spending money. We're not sitting around.
We're spending money. We're entertained. We're happy. We're looking at shops.
Yeah, we're not, you know, just standing in a line getting more and pissed off that we're in line.
And that's one of the things that I think Disney World figured out with the Fast Pass is customers in a dense queue aren't happy and they aren't making any money.
Yeah.
You got to find a way to get them to spend as little time in that queue as possible. And that's something we've got to do. But it's also a security thing.
Yeah.
That's where your fights break out. That's where your arguments happen. That's where the shootings happened.
Yeah.
So we need to avoid large crowds and queue lines. And basically, we also need to find ways to implement enforced policies against drop-offs.
Yeah.
This was a major problem at the haunt in North Carolina.
Right.
It was a major problem, actually, at some of the haunts locally. Parents basically pulling up, kicking their kids out of the car, pick you up in 3 hours, and making the haunt a babysitter. You can't do that. You're not equipped for that.
So... We're not equipped for that normally, but I think Texas haunts have figured out a way to be a babysitter.
Yeah.
And that's to have all of the outdoor games, the concert space, and all of that, so that kids have a place to hang out that's safe.
Yeah, there's a lot of haunts in Texas, a lot of haunts.
Yeah.
Like Creepy World and so forth that are set up. They're haunted. They call themselves haunted theme parks or haunt parks.
Right.
And yeah, they are. I mean, they do have multiple small attractions instead of one big one.
Well, and that one that we went to last at the end of the night with the free
beer.
Free beer.
Yeah, don't drop the kids off of that one. Maybe that's not the one.
Well, okay. So it wasn't free beer for the kids.
Yeah,
it
was you had to show your ID to get your wristband.
Yeah. But that was a neat idea because they had all of the carnival games, but then they also had, when you bought your ticket, it was an unlimited pass to go through the haunt.
Mm-hmm.
So if you wanted to go through it once and then go play some games and then go through it again, you could.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a possibility.
Yeah, you literally could spend all evening in one place, especially if you're drinking the beer.
Yeah, and they had food too. So.
Yeah, they had food. They had lots of carnival games, had tons of interesting carnival games.
Yeah.
I think they had something like 15 of them.
I think it also had the most actors walking about.
Yeah. Yeah. They had a lot of, I can't call them queue actors,
right,
but roaming
actors.
Right, exactly. What do you call those? We need a name.
Roaming actors.
In front of house actors.
Yeah.
So yeah,
they were really cool.
So yeah, if you have a home that's not set up for drop-offs like that, mm-hmm. then you need to have a policy and find a way to enforce a policy against that.
Yeah.
Because that's a safety issue. Unattended, unmonitored minors are a problem.
Yeah, it is.
It's not because kids are dumb, but kids are dumb.
Very well put.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. So number two, Crystal,
number
kick
two.
Us off.
All right. The need for better financial stability.
Oh, Lord of mercy.
There were so many times that we heard we had to open because if we didn't, we'd have to close forever. That's not a good business model.
No.
You know?
Yeah, and yeah, okay. I get it. Okay, there's not a lot of businesses that could survive being closed for a full year.
Right.
But those are 52 weeks a year business.
Yeah.
We are usually 4 to 8 weeks a year.
Yeah.
And usually only weekends on most of those days. And so if you're that razor thin, mm-hmm. that being closed the season, even if you don't pay your actors that because they're not working, you're not carrying your insurance, mm-hmm. all that stuff, you can't reopen. Realistically means one bad season could kill you.
Right.
Which means one bad week or one bad weekend could kill you.
Right. And I haven't looked into it for haunts, but I know that when working in the corporate world, they have disaster/umbrella insurance so that if they have a bad year, they can say, hey, insurance guy, you know, this happened and it cost us business, you know?
Yeah.
So like if a hurricane hits New Orleans and takes out power.
And I know a lot of outdoor haunts have rain insurance.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that maybe that's something to look into for a lot of these haunts. Because if we're closed again next year for COVID.
Or limited at the very least. And it's looking likely, honestly.
Yeah. Oh, and the minks did spread to human.
I saw. So. Yeah. It's looking very likely that we'll be impacted by COVID. It may not be as serious as 2020, but it does look like we're going to be impacted 2021. I've lost all my optimism. Because it's funny. I mean, I remember back in March, April, so forth, thinking, oh, yeah, it's really nasty right now, but it's not going to impact haunt season. And now it's like in November. I'm like, oh, yeah, 2021 is fine.
Yeah. Well, and I think that that's one of the problems we had this year in planning for it, is that it was so up in the air about whether or not we'd be able to open.
Yeah.
You know, that people didn't plan for, well, what if we're not, or what if we have to do limited?
And I know a lot of haunts. I know from experience in having to cancel haunts, I have way more experience in that than I should.
Yeah.
That we, as a home haunt, have to pull the trigger in mid-September, if we're going to. Because that's before we buy the flyers, before we do the promotion, before we get the word. We can't just the Tuesday before we open say, oh, never mind, we're canceled.
No.
Because we're still going to get huge crowds. We're still going to get people showing up.
Yeah.
It's a mess. So, but with a pro haunt, yeah, you have insurances, you have things to do. For a lot of those haunts, they have to pull that trigger back in June, July.
Right.
And I think what happened is a lot of haunts didn't pull the trigger when they should have. And they got caught carrying these expensive policies and holding a very expensive bag.
Right.
And yeah, and they're probably right. If they had to close, given the fact they'd already paid for all this stuff, they might not have been able to reopen. They probably were right about that. So that may have been some of it, but we need the ability to sustain shocks better than we do. And we've seen this before locally. The House of Shock,
right?
Famously, the first time it closed mm-hmm. was because they got rained out on Halloween.
Yeah.
Biggest night of the year. They did a huge percentage of their business on it.
Right.
And they had to cancel, and it ended up being a jokes on everyone moment because the rain never came.
Yeah.
The rain they were canceling for. But they had to pull the trigger early.
Yeah.
They did the right thing doing it when they did. I don't like necessarily disagree with the decision, but that killed them. That ended it. They'd been a huge successful haunt for 20 plus years at that point. And yeah, okay, they'd seen that times had been a little more difficult more recently, but they'd been huge, big, successful. And then that happened and it was just one speed bump too many.
Yeah.
So yeah. We have to find a path to better financial stability. We can't be an industry where one bad season or even one missed season is the death knell of so many haunts.
Right. Well, and now it may actually be easier.
Yeah.
To change some of your round strategy, because people are used to doing virtual things now. So why not do virtual tours throughout the year, or, you know, interviews with characters and things like that, you know, for a small fee.
You know, honestly, I do any haunts. I have a question.
Uh-huh.
Is there any haunt, you know, and I'm asking this to the audience, that has their haunt characters do cameo accounts?
I follow at least two haunt characters that do.
But are they, like, connected to the haunt, or are they just freelancers?
Yes. Okay. No, they're connected to the haunt. Okay. They're connected to the haunt, and they get together with the other haunt members and do live chats.
Okay.
It's kind of fun.
But they have a cameo account where they can do paid promotional stuff.
Oh, I don't know about that.
See, I'm talking about the cameo.com, which is a service.
Gotcha, sorry.
That, like, if you want Miro from AEW to say good things about your product, you can pay him X amount of money. I don't know how much it is.
Yeah.
And he'll do a 15-second promo on it.
Right.
You know, you can literally do that now. So I think that's something.
Oh, that's pretty cool. I would.
Bernie could do that, theoretically.
Why doesn't Bernie do that?
I don't know. But seriously, it's an idea you can
I know why Bernie doesn't do that. Because we're not a business.
No, true. But the point of the matter is, you can. There's the alternate sources of income that are possible year round.
Yeah.
But we need this path to better financial stability. And this has a major impact on charities, too, because charities cannot depend solely upon haunted attractions. We saw this, unfortunately, with Chinchubas locally.
Right.
When the money from Chinchubas haunted house stopped coming in because the haunt became untenable.
Yeah.
Chinchubas itself, which was an amazing charity, it was a school for the deaf, it did really great work. The school itself was forced to close not long thereafter.
Yeah. And part of that was damage from Katrina, and part of it was that they didn't have the income that they had.
They just weren't able to continue.
Mm-hmm.
And so charities need to realize this too. And basically, we need better financial stability right now, because we got exposed this year in this regard in terms of not being able to withstand shocks, because there were so many haunts, like you said, that we're like, yeah, I know it's not safe, but we don't have a choice.
Yeah.
If we don't open, if we don't do something, we will never open our doors again.
Yeah.
And so basically, they're saying, you know, it's either we put ourselves and our customers in physical risk, or we don't have a business.
Yeah, and that doesn't seem like
that's a devil's choice.
Yeah. Yeah, that doesn't seem like something that should be happening. And going back to the virtual things, there have been a lot of virtual escape rooms come up now.
Mm-hmm.
There are, in fact, we talked about this on an episode recently. That's something to look into as a longer term strategy, is to be able to create one using rooms in your haunt. Then you don't have to change your haunt into an escape room. You can just do a virtual one.
Yeah.
I think that would be a really cool idea.
I do too. All right, number three. This is more talking about the larger haunts, but we need to get back to building some more of our props.
Yeah.
This was something that surprised me. I heard this over and over and over again, especially in groups. But people talk, I mean, because here's the deal. We love our haunt vendors.
Yeah.
They are a crucial part of this industry. We love them. We cherish them. We support them. But apparently some haunts have become really reliant on them. We heard multiple people talk about how they struggled to update their haunt this year without Transworld.
Yeah, which is crazy.
Basically, there was no Transworld, so therefore we didn't get to see and go prop shopping.
Right.
Therefore, we didn't have a lot new to bring to the haunt.
Yeah, now I understand where some of them are coming from, because they're business people first.
Yeah.
And creative haunters second. Or maybe not even at all in some cases.
I get it.
So, I mean, some are not going to have that ability to say, okay, well, we can't go to Transworld. We can't see what's popular. What can we do? What can we make? They just don't have that skill
set. Or how can we repurpose what we already have, even?
Right, exactly.
In a creative and new way.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I was actually kind of surprised about this, because, I mean, on one hand, a lot of haunts, like I know New Orleans Nightmare, Sandy talked about this when we met him.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, we actually had fun with it. For us, it was getting back to the old days. It was,
right.
We were getting back, and I'm like, that's the way it should be. That's what,
yeah.
But a lot of haunts had kind of the opposite thing, where it's like, what are we going to do for an update? We're screwed, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
They just kind of,
And the other thing is that the vendors are still out there.
Yeah.
They were still out there. They were begging you to buy from them.
They were never more than a Google away. No, okay, I get it. It's a big ask.
Yeah.
To say you're going to buy a $5,000, $10,000, $15,000, whatever dollar prop, sight unseen.
Yeah.
I do understand that's a huge ask.
Right.
But if you know the vendor, you trust them, you respect their work, you know what they do.
Yeah. And here's the thing for vendors is that they could set up a virtual demonstration.
Yeah.
Of, okay, you're interested in this prop? Let me walk you through it. This is how it's built. This is how it works.
Let me zoom in on the details.
Zoom in the details. Answer any questions that you have while showing it off.
And it would be really cool. They could, if I were a haunt vendor, I'd be doing these type of things like weekly on Facebook Live, like this podcast.
Yeah.
Where we just go on. And this week we're talking about the shake and bake prop or whatever. And
oh, God.
We're doing a full two.
You're going way back.
I don't know why that popped in my head, okay? Maybe because I'm still a bit traumatized from working and hearing, ka-dunk, ka-dunk, there are people 4 rooms away, scurry to the IDO. I still hear that, ka-dunk, 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 shake and bake and want to, like, cower in my hidey hole and get ready to scare someone. It's like a reflex. It's like Pavlovian in nature, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, now we're showcasing this prop. Here's this new Jack in the Box prop we have, and here's how it works. And just do a brief tutorial how it works, show the detail off,
right,
and offer a discount to people that attended the live stream.
Yeah, and if anyone's interested in meeting with you virtually, and then do it, you know, meet with them.
Yeah, I mean, I get, though, it is a big ask to buy 4 and 5 figure props sight unseen.
Yeah.
I get that, but there's also a need, I think, to pull some lessons from the home haunters and the charity haunters that have to build everything themselves.
Right.
We can't afford no $5,000 prop. We're a simple country haunt around here.
Yeah. It's like double our budget.
So we're used to building everything ourselves, and that means we sometimes stick to the simple but effective scares. Taking a lesson from that, learning how to build new things, learning how to repurpose creatively what you have, that spirit needs to be brought back some.
Yeah, it does. And it brings creativity into it that is sometimes lacking in the industry.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And I think that's one of the dangers. We have such great, and part of the problem is, this is like such a weird problem to have. We have vendors that are too good.
Yeah, everybody wants them.
Everybody wants the props. I get it, man.
Yeah.
I drool over that crap too. Okay.
Yeah.
I get the catalogs in. I'm like, ugh. I'm practically eating the page.
Yeah.
I get it. But yeah, maybe bringing in some of that DIY spirit will help us be a little more flexible in the future. Moving on.
All right. So next, we're going to talk about focus on improving the variety of acting.
Yes.
So 2020 exposed us a bit in this because, you know, everybody was like, oh no, how am I going to scare people if I can't get up close to them and yell at them? Well, there are other ways to scare people.
Yeah.
You know, we've talked about different types of scares all throughout this. And this is actually one of the things that bothered me, because I've heard from several people who went to haunted attractions this year. And I've seen online videos of people going through haunts and the actors were still doing this. They were still getting up in your face. They were still screaming at you. And a lot of them weren't wearing masks. The actors were not made to wear masks this year while screaming in somebody's face.
And screaming being one of the quickest ways to transmit a disease.
Yeah, that ticks me off to no end. So think of other ways that you can scare people if you need to, because that is not, it loses impact over the course of the haunt.
Yeah. Like, and I think of that haunt we went to in Birmingham.
Yeah.
Because it was a quote-unquote touch haunt. And basically, every time you walk into a room, they would come in and they would, like, play with your hair
yeah.
and muss you up a little bit and then send you on your way. And by like room 20, it's like, okay, mess my hair up, please.
Yeah.
You know?
Exactly.
Just get it over with.
Yeah, if they had had anything else as a scare.
Well, they did. They had the draw panel that got me pretty good. Remember that?
Yeah.
Because they said that was tactically the great. They had the guy waving the ceiling. Hey, look at me. We all look at him. Boom, drop panel like 2 feet from us.
Yeah.
You son of a bitch. That was actually good. Congratulations. One good thing.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, that is a good way to distract, is to draw people's eye off.
And he was very socially distanced way up there in the rafters.
Exactly. And so was the actor behind the drop panel, because that wall was at least 2 feet from you.
Yeah. And they could have just put Lexander plexiglass over and called it a day.
Yeah.
I mean, so yeah, there. That's just it. A lot of haunts. And there were several haunts in their closure announcement said, we're closing because we can't provide you the in-your-face experience. We can't scare you good enough to our satisfaction without the ability to get close.
Yeah.
And I'm like, guys, there's so many other weapons in the toolbox.
Yeah. And speaking of Lexan and plexiglass with a drop panel combo, that is one of my favorites that we've done. Because we haven't had drop panels for a while. But we had a drop panel that had a Lexan in front of it that was thick. And my dad hit the crap out of it with a hammer.
Rubber mallet. We're getting rubber mallets to hit. Because it gets a better thud when it's a rubber mallet, I find.
Yeah.
You want that dull
but
thud.
Drop hit towards you and people scattered.
Yeah,
it
people
was great.
And then drop, people start looking at it. And they'll go, go. And then you see this guy swinging a hammer full force at your face.
Yeah.
And that Lexan wasn't going anywhere.
No, I think it got cracked by the end of the
second season
we used it.
We used it past its lifespan was the problem. It wasn't the Lexan that cracked, it was the frame.
Yeah.
We realized after the fact we didn't frame it properly. We now are a little smarter about that.
More. Yeah.
But the fact it held up that many hits, and her dad is a beefy lad who can hit some things hard.
Yeah.
He's mighty beefy and can hit things with a lot of force.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But here's the thing. We should be able to scare, entertain people, whether we're near, far, with a prop, on a rock, on a plane, on a train, wherever. We have to have that ability, and we have to have that adaptability. So maybe if there's a lesson from 2020, it should be that we need to focus on a variety of acting, a variety of scare types, so that if we have one trick taken away from us, that were not so hobbled.
Exactly.
Because, I mean, I got so tired of those haunts. Like, well, we can't provide the show we want to. We're not going to be good enough. And then just we're closing. And I appreciate, you know, closing rather than getting in people's face and screaming at them.
Right.
That's good.
Yes.
But there's nothing else you can do. That's it.
No.
This feels weak.
Yeah.
Just feels weak to me.
Yeah. Oh, one of the other scares I just remembered in Mortuary a long time ago. They had the head on the string gag.
Yeah. Oh,
so they throw it toward you, and the head doesn't come within 6 feet of you, but it sure is.
Feels like it.
Feels, yes, it makes you jump back.
Yeah, I was wondering why the head was getting bigger and bigger, and then it hit me.
Yes.
Boo the bad pun. All right. Final one, lesson number 5, disease prevention forever.
Yes.
A lot of haunts that opened generally took good steps to prevent or reduce the spread of COVID, or at least they tried to. But here's my question. Forget about COVID.
Mm-hmm.
What about the flu? What about the ever famous, ever present, never going away haunt crud we hear about every year? I mean, I'm not saying we have to do the full COVID thing every year and have actors behind plastic sheeting and whatnot, but a lot of the protections we put in place this year are just common smarts to stop any virus.
Yeah.
I mean, think about like some of the changes people made to the actor areas.
Yeah.
Separating the costumes out, having washing makeup brushes and making sure.
Yeah, that should be done anyway.
Yeah, that should.
Period.
I mean, all of these very basic things that were done to prevent the spread of COVID also work against the flu, the haunt crud, colds, sinus infections, whatever else. And then, like, another one is having policies that make it okay for actors to take sick days.
Yeah.
Don't punish actors for staying home when they're sick.
No.
And, okay, I get it. It's in the good spirit to award a perfect attendance award.
Mm-hmm.
But I would much rather have an actor especially if I'm running a long season,
right,
who has imperfect attendance, but only stayed home because they didn't want to get everyone else sick.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you know, a job or a career or work. And we understand that you have a limited number of nights and certain actors have a bigger role in your haunt. But always try to have a backup for those.
Yeah. We need to be able to let actors take time off when they get sick to avoid getting the rest of the haunt crew sick and it becoming a debilitating condition.
Yeah.
I know 1 year we went to a haunt and it was a big outdoor thing with multiple attractions, and the owners apologized to us. They actually recognized us from our reviews.
Yeah.
They recognized when we walked on the property pretty much. And I'm sorry, we only have 10 of the usual 40 actors we have.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on? Oh, there was the flu.
Yeah.
The flu came, swooped in, and took everyone out.
Yeah. I wonder if you could do a flu shot at the haunt, like early or late September. Because that's when I get mine at work.
Yeah.
I
tried to get mine. I failed.
Yeah. But my work, you know, makes it convenient. You know, if you're doing actor training or something, why not say, hey, can you get a flu shot
Honestly,
while you're
I
here?
Honestly, I think flu shot should be a requirement for working in a haunt, that environment.
Yeah.
You probably won't and need a flu shot.
Yeah.
For your crew to be inoculated against it. I mean, and you also have to think, in the similar vein, you also have to think about the queue line and the queue line actors and how they are constantly being exposed. Everyone's going to be exposed by the people going through the haunt. I get that. But the queue line is especially dangerous, especially if there's an indoor element of it.
Right.
Because there's a dense pack of humanity. They're not moving. You're in the same airspace with them for an extended period of time.
Yeah.
And if you're a queue line actor, that's potentially a great way to get sick, not just with COVID, but anything.
Exactly.
So the precautions we're taking to break apart the queue line and avoid those large crowds maybe needs to be more permanent.
Mm-hmm.
So that way we can avoid, you know, giving those illnesses. I mean, one of the hopes people have is that the precautions we're taking against COVID will also make this a very mild flu season.
Right.
And that makes a lot of sense because the protections work against any type of virus. Look, I'm the first to admit COVID changed the way I think about fighting viruses. I was always, you know, someone's like, you know, I train my immune system with alcohol. I kill the germs when they get. I was one of those guys, you know. I still technically am, but no. The point is, it's like, yeah, I never really washed my hands outside of moments in my life where I absolutely had to for one reason or another. Like, you know, if I came in contact with fecal matter or I was chopping jalapenos or something. I never really regularly washed my hands.
No.
I would do the whole, okay, wash, oh, we're done.
Yeah.
You know, type thing.
Yeah.
We're done.
Yeah.
Type thing. And now it's like, no, every time I'm in there, it's, you know, a good long scrubbing.
Yeah. Yeah, and I find myself using the spray.
Yeah, often. The hand sanitizer spray.
Hand sanitizer often, too, in between hand washings.
Yeah. And so,
and putting those little bottles of hand sanitizer in actor areas could be a lifesaver.
Yeah.
I mean, it really could. So
it really, really could. So we need to think about how some of them, maybe not going all whole hog on it. You know,
right.
We'll be back to our older ways of scaring and all that soon enough, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of the improvements we made to fight COVID should stick around forever just because they fight other diseases.
Yeah.
And the haunt crud is so legendary, it's time we did what we could to stop it. Well, that's our five lessons for haunts in 2020. I thought that was, like I said, I was really happy with this one because I think these are actually good, valuable lessons. And, you know, yeah, 2020 is an unusual, and I know it's cliche, but unprecedented season. But the point is, there's been some valuable lessons here that I think haunts can use moving forward and should use moving forward, even in more normal years.
Yeah.
So, returning to the weekly question, I know the question is, obviously, for those that recall, for those that don't recall, how do you deal with your after-season depression? We have a few answers. I see. Crystal, take it away.
Okay. Chris Gay says that he watches spooky holiday movies like Krampus to help transition from spooky to begrudgingly merry.
You know, I'll say this. I'm not a Christmas person at all.
Yeah.
I'm not a Christmas. In fact, she mentioned we work on an anti-Christmas list.
Yeah.
I get roughly 5 minutes of Christmas cheer every year. Or maybe a day's worth at the most of true, genuine Christmas cheer. And you know what? Because Christmas comes earlier and earlier and earlier, it usually happens in November.
But yeah.
Usually my Christmas cheer is done with before Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Maybe time to push Christmas back a little bit so I could actually at least have the Christmas cheer in December.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Be nice if it were in the right month.
Well, anyway, yeah, that's not going to happen. I'm sorry.
Sorry about that. That was an aside, but go ahead.
Yeah. Well, and Christmas tries to kill me. So
yeah, we know so, you're.
That's my history with it.
Allergies and mortal wounds to your knee. We know.
Yeah. Halloween Haunts 365. I don't deal. I just start thinking about next season, what I'm going to do with the site for the off season, and look forward to September every day.
One of the things we talked about is. Yep. Getting started right away.
Yep. Pete Blackwell, focus on Thanksgiving and Christmas. And I think he might have added more to that. If you can go through the notes while I continue.
Okay.
Greg Reinhart, start doing outside Christmas setup and start planning for props and stuff for his son's school play. Tate Haynes, I listen to your podcast and many others to get me through. It's cool to listen to how much fun everybody had. For me, it was more traditional Halloween. No trunk or treat this year, and streets were filled with happy kids getting candy. It's been a while since I've had this much fun on Halloween. I dragged a trailer with my lawn tractor with my kids in the trailer. It was a blast.
Does sound like a lot of fun. I don't think Pete did add to it.
And then Don Garlic said, I love Christmas as much as Halloween, so I make it a whole season. Yeah, but we knew that about her.
Yeah, we did. You and Ellie both are like these sick, demented Christmas people. I don't understand it.
Yeah.
But regardless, those are some good answers. And if you are listening to this recorded, please do take a moment. Drop this at youtube.com/hauntweeklies, our YouTube channel. Just comment on the video. We'll get an email. YouTube will kindly send us an email about that. You can also find us at facebook.com/hauntweekly. You can leave it either on this thread here for the live stream or on the actual post, which will go up tomorrow. You can also do it at twitter.com/hauntweekly. At replies and DMs are both open. And of course, hauntweekly.com is the home base. You can send an email there to the contact form. And as always, you can find us at iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever finer podcasts are sold. But they don't let you comment and answer the question of the week through those.
Yeah.
Sorry. So you got to go to Facebook, Twitter, hauntweekly.com. I know you're one. I know it's so few choices. It's terrible. We're terrible taskmasters here. But I think that's about it. Anything? Any final thoughts?
No.
I think that was about it.
Yeah.
Good run. Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this was Haunt Weekly, episode 258, 5 Lessons for Haunts from 2020. We will see you all next week.